It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have 52 degrees outside under a light rain. Out at the airport, they are showing 89% humidity, southeast winds to 5 miles per hour, and we're back to 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak City Council got a look at the new concept for the fire station. Kavitha George looks into the possibility of a constitutional convention in Alaska. A Saab 2000 aircraft landed in Unalaska Wednesday morning. We'll tell you why that was exciting for Unalaskans. And NOAA Fisheries Alaska Regional Office has laid out their 5-year strategic plan.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. About 50 migrants are now being housed at a military base on Cape Cod after being flown to Martha's Vineyard by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis without notice this week. NPR's Greg Allen reports the move has drawn backlash from the White House and congressional Democrats who accuse Republican governors of using migrants as political pawns.
State records show that Florida tapped a $12 million fund set up by the legislature, paying more than $600,000 to a company that operated the flights on Wednesday. Democrats, immigration activists, and human rights groups have condemned the flights as an inhumane political stunt aimed at enhancing DeSantis' expected bid for the Republican presidential nomination. DeSantis defends his actions, saying the migrants were treated humanely and denies that any were misled. And he says more flights may be coming.
The legislature gave me $12 million. We're going to spend every penny of that to make sure that we're protecting the people of the state of Florida.
DeSantis says contractors are working with the state to identify and divert migrants headed to Florida. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
Ukrainian investigators have exhumed hundreds of bodies from a burial site in the recently liberated city of Izyum. NPR's Jason Bobian reports the investigators have found evidence, in Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's words, of people who were tortured, shot, and killed by shelling.
NPR witnessed bodies with hands still tied behind their backs being dug up from graves in a forest on the outskirts of Izyum. Other corpses were mutilated, but it was unclear how those injuries occurred. Kharkiv's regional prosecutor, Alexander Ilyankov, is working with forensics experts at the scene. He says they believe there are more than 500 civilians buried at the site. He said one of the bodies they just exhumed had a rope still around its neck. Jason Bobian, NPR News, Kharkiv, Ukraine.
The line to file past Queen Elizabeth's coffin at London's Westminster Hall is back up and running. The line was temporarily paused after reaching full capacity today. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports people wanting to pay their final respects to the nation's longest-serving monarch are now facing a 24-hour wait time.
Well, it's really interesting. Yesterday, it wasn't that bad. I mean, maybe it was 3 miles and the lines were moving very quickly. But today, I think people have seen what's happening and people are pouring in, not just from outside of London, but from coming in from great distances from the north of England. It's now, as you were saying, it's 5 miles down the Thames, and they're now saying that it could take up to 24 hours for people at the end of the line to make it up to Parliament, which is where the Queen is lying in state.
That's NPR's Frank Langfitt reporting from London. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Plans for Kodiak's new fire station are moving along. Late last month, city council members got a first look at the concept for the new building. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth has this update.
The concept presented to Kodiak City Council includes a single story on Mill Bay Road with a drive-through garage bay for the station's trucks and engines. Two additional floors would be built into the hillside with a public entrance facing Baranoff Park on the bottom level. Councilmember Rich Walker is on the city's firehouse design committee.
So far, we've had nothing but positive reviews on the design. I have not heard very many negative ones at all.
There's reason to be excited. Kodiak's current fire station is in desperate need of replacing. Parts of the original building are from the 1940s and are crumbling. The earthquake in 2018 created even more structural problems. And to top it off, it sits in the tsunami inundation area. The city of Kodiak received $7 million in funding from the federal omnibus spending package passed earlier this year. And Governor Dunleavy's most recently signed capital budget also includes $15 million for a new station, bringing the city's available funds to $22 million so far for the project. However, the total cost for the new station presented to council members at last month's work session is nearly $6 million more than that. That's because of inflation and supply chain issues and additional soft costs like furniture for the new facility. But that price tag isn't final. Kodiak City Manager Mike Twenge.
As we get close to the final design, that's when we'll know our cost more accurate.
The city expects to receive a more detailed design with an updated cost estimate next month and a guaranteed maximum price sometime in April. Both would need approval from city council. And if the city does need more money, Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson says finding the funds hasn't held up the project before.
This has been the city's number one project for several years. And we never put it on hold, not knowing where the funding was going to come from.
Branson and city officials say they could break ground on the new fire station as early as June. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The constitutional convention question is coming up on the November ballot. That's Alaskans' once-in-a-decade opportunity to decide whether to open up the state constitution for revisions. Anti-abortion advocates and proponents of a constitutional convention have their eyes on one section of the document in particular, the privacy clause, which is the basis for reproductive rights in Alaska. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George explains what the privacy clause is and what could happen to abortion rights if a convention takes place.
The Privacy Clause of the Alaska State Constitution dates back to the early 1970s. Around that time, concerns about the evolving information age, the use of computers, and the security of individuals' private information were taking root. In 1972, the Alaska legislature drafted a constitutional amendment that explicitly guarantees the right to privacy, and voters overwhelmingly approved it. Over the years, legal decisions have defined what the right to privacy includes in Alaska.
The right to privacy is a steadily evolving one.
That's former Alaska Attorney General Bruce Botello. Broadly, the privacy clause protects the right to shield personal information as well as the right to personal autonomy.
It's decided in part by cases that are real controversies. And those controversies illuminate what the contours of that right to privacy is.
And it's led to some important changes in Alaska law. It supports marijuana possession rights in our state, and it's also the basis for Alaskans' reproductive rights. Abortion has been a legal medical procedure in Alaska since 1970, before Roe v. Wade. But the law included a provision that no hospital or person was required to participate in providing an abortion. In 1997, that was challenged when a group of pro-choice advocates sued a hospital in Palmer that had banned abortions. The case reached the Alaska Supreme Court, where justices ruled that the Constitution's privacy clause protects individuals' rights to abortion.
I mean, there's some great language in the case about what could be more private and more personal than the right to decide what to do with your own body.
That's Susan Orlansky, cooperative counsel for the Alaska ACLU. Orlansky says in the years since the Palmer Hospital decision, other rulings have referenced the privacy clause to enumerate the scope of abortion rights. For example, in 2019, the Alaska Supreme Court rejected laws that restricted access to abortion for people on Medicaid. About a dozen U.S. states have similar privacy clauses in their state constitutions, and a few, including Florida, Montana, and Minnesota, view abortion as legal under the right to privacy. If a constitutional convention happens in Alaska, Orlansky says there are a number of ways an abortion ban might be written into the law.
You could rewrite the privacy clause exactly the way it is now with a comma, except that this doesn't apply to abortion. Or you could write in Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution, this Constitution applies to everyone, and by everyone we include life from the moment of conception. That would be a really easy way to do it.
In any case, delegates would have to approve the new language, and then Alaska voters would need to vote to accept the revised constitution after the convention. Botello says that might not be easy to achieve.
The bar is high, and to be honest, not simply with this issue, but I think, let's say, generally, one should want a high bar before changing the fundamental law of the state.
In a state that has historically supported access to abortion, Botello says any constitutional abortion bans would likely be difficult to pass. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
A Saab 2000 aircraft landed in Unalaska Wednesday morning for the first time in 3 years. It was a test flight for Aleutian Airways, a new regional carrier. They needed to demonstrate to the Federal Aviation Administration that they're qualified to land the aircraft at Tom Madsen Airport. Brian Wilden is the general manager for the Nation Airline, and he was on the flight that touched down just after 11 a.m. on Wednesday.
This is a Saab 2000, the first time it's been here in 3 years. We just landed. We brought our FAA with us. We're doing a test flight.
The Saab 2000 is the same kind of aircraft that was involved in the fatal plane crash in Unalaska in 2019. This is the first time that aircraft has landed in Unalaska since. In August, the FAA cleared the airline to fly to Cold Bay, King Salmon, and Dillingham, but stalled their approval of Unalaska and Sandpoint due to safety regulations. Wilden said they had to go through a rigorous safety and approval process before being cleared to land. He reassured the community that their pilots used to fly for Penn Air, a former regional airline, so they have thousands of hours of experience in landing Saab 2000s in Unalaska.
We're here to show the FAA that we understand how to do this and understand this market, and we can operate here successfully.
An FAA representative was on board the test flight to monitor operations. Unalaska Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson met with her after the flight landed and said she deemed it successful. The highly anticipated arrival comes at a particularly fraught time. Soaring fuel costs, inflation, and a pilot shortage have all contributed to extremely high ticket prices and unpredictable travel in Unalaska. Those effects are particularly hard felt on the remote Aleutian Island, where a short runway and inclement weather create additional challenges. Raven Alaska has operated the only commercial nonstop flights to Anchorage for the past 3 years, and many locals have been awaiting the arrival of a competing airline. But this is the first time it's actually seemed close to happening.
Next steps is we finish the certification process with the FAA, and then we launch a schedule.
Wilden says they still need to finish the certification process with the FAA. He did not say when exactly they would be able to launch a schedule, but says he hopes it will be in the fall. A new 5-year plan from the NOAA Fisheries Alaska Regional Office lays out institutional values and goals for Alaska fisheries and for working with their many stakeholders. The plan was published in early September. In an opening letter, Regional Administrator John Kurland reminds readers that Alaska fisheries produce more than half the seafood caught in U.S. waters and contribute more than $7 billion to the national economy. The plan is meant to guide sustainable management of those critical fisheries.
I've been working for NOAA Fisheries for almost 15 years, and you see a lot of strategic plans. And the thing that struck me that was different about this process was that, first and foremost, it was built around our shared values.
Alicia Bishop is the aquaculture coordinator for the Alaska Regional Office, and she's one of two staff members who worked on developing the strategic plan and running review meetings. She says one major difference between this plan and traditional strategic plans is the way it centers on values rather than functions.
We started this effort in May of 2021, And as part of taking a new approach here, we hired a consultant who really kind of helps guide and frame this strategic plan.
The organization reached out to 22 external agencies to garner their feedback and interviewed every internal staff member. Bishop says some of those external stakeholders included the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. She says many of the objectives ultimately included in the plan were influenced by these interviews.
So I think you will see a lot of those kind of components bubbling up in that strategic plan, specifically based off of the feedback that we received from stakeholders.
One objective is improving the relationship with the state of Alaska, and another targets co-management effectiveness with Alaska Native tribes, another major stakeholder. The plan is organized into 22 strategies and subdivided into 5 categories. Bishop says the plan isn't designed to just sit on a shelf, and NOAA Fisheries is already taking action on several strategies.
We have already developed 61 initiatives, and out of those, we already have progress on 51%. So even though this is a 5-year plan, the work's already starting, and it's pretty exciting to kind of see the progress being made.
She says the organization has already put together internal teams and set up quarterly review meetings to check in with staff and make sure the initiatives are progressing. One effort that has come out of the strategic plan is hiring a tribal liaison. They recently put out a hiring announcement for that position. The strategic plan is designed to span from 2022 to 2027. A large storm that could reach hurricane-force winds is headed toward western Alaska. It's forecast to start this afternoon and continue into Saturday. The forecast says it'll be especially strong along the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta coast. KYUK's Nina Kravinsky has more.
The National Weather Service is urging people to begin preparing for the storm now. Meteorologist Caitlin O'Brien says it's the strongest September storm here in about 2 decades.
This is a significant storm. Generally, we see our stronger storms in the winter months.
There's a coastal flood warning in effect for the Kuskokwim Delta coast that starts at 9 p.m. on Friday and lasts through 4 p.m. on Saturday. O'Brien says water levels on the coast could be 5 to 8 feet above regular high tide. She says NWS is also tracking the potential for hurricane-force winds in the Kuskokwim Delta.
There we are anticipating southerly winds 45 to 60 miles per hour with gusts up to 80 miles per hour.
O'Brien says this storm is the remnants of Typhoon Murbach, which is now moving into the Bering Sea. Claude Denver is the response manager with Alaska's Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He says while this is a big storm, communities have experienced storms this large in other months before and can use that experience to prepare.
So we always encourage people, hey, remember what happened the last time we had a huge storm? What did you do? You know, when your boats were swamped because they were right on the shoreline, and you moved them and they're okay now? That's the kind of stuff we want people to go back into their knowledge base and figure out what they think they can do to lessen the impact of this particular event.
He suggests that communities find people most at risk, like elders and folks with medical issues, and make sure they're safe.
In some instances, some of the folks will live closest to the waterline or the most medically fragile. Well, maybe this is the time to kind of take steps to move them to a place that's much more secure and stable.
Denver says it's a good idea to prepare for a power outage and to collect drinking water in extra containers. He also says it's important to secure loose items in boats.
If you have folks that are out hunting or going to go hunting, maybe this is time for you to take a step back from that until the storm passes.
Both the National Weather Service and the State Emergency Management say individuals are welcome to update them with any serious storm damage they see. The departments say that information helps with data collection and with decisions on where to send resources. The National Weather Service encourages people to continue to check in for updates. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
Read Diverse, Read Indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Kiyomi O'Connor's book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant Search for Home and Self, explores her trying childhood in Japan and her journey as she emigrates to the United States. The book follows her through her travels, falling in love with her future husband, only to lose him after 2.5 decades to cancer, and navigating grief and unresolved trauma. She also discusses how, after many years of struggle and searching, she finally found the love and light that existed within her all along. We spoke with her about this most personal story.
While I was writing this memoir, I felt his presence, existence around me. And I have to even disclose difficulty around him. You know, his illness, or even before he became ill, we had a little difficult situations. So to disclose those difficulties, I was hesitant. I didn't want to embarrass him or, you know, go into the confidential matter, but he was tapping my shoulder, and then he is the one encouraging me to get through.
That's Kiyomi O'Connor on her new book, A Sky of Infinite Blue, A Japanese Immigrant's Search for Home and Self, which has just been released. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Friday. It is the 16th day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:42. It will set again at 8:24. That will give us 12 hours and 43 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 34 degrees. That was set in 1996 and 2003. And our record high was 67, set in 1980. Looking at our local tides, we just had a low tide here on the east side. That happened at 12:03 and was 0.3 feet, 3/10. Our next high tide will be at 6:23 p.m. and be 8.1 feet. Over on the west side, you're about to have a low tide at 12:34 p.m. That will be a 4.3-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 6:48 this evening of 12.4 feet.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 37. Date issued 11 o'clock on September 13th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Sunday, September 18th to 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 20th in the following areas. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for the Inner Ugak and Outer Ugak Bay sections, remain closed. The Outer Iqaluk, Halibut Bay, Sturgeon, and Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. As previously announced, fishermen were reminded that until further notice in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course, most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side. Small craft advisory tonight and tomorrow. Northwest 15 should turn to the southeast this afternoon, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, southwest 20, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow, west 20, seas to 8 feet. For tonight, southwest 15, seas at 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southeast 15 today, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, southeast 15, becoming variable 10, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow, in the Shelikof, southwest 20, seas 4 feet, building to 7 feet tomorrow afternoon. Saturday night, look for southwest winds to 20 knots and seas to 6 feet. The Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation invites you to our annual meeting and open house that's happening today. The open house starts at 5:30 this afternoon, and the meeting will be broadcast on KMXT starting at 6:17 p.m. It'll be a chance to get to know some of the folks down here at KMXT and the direction we're going, hopefully. And the come on by the station in person if you can. We're conveniently located between the high school and the library up here on Borough Hill. There will be refreshments. Also, today until 2 p.m. and tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., it's the free electronic recycling event. It's a chance to get rid of those electronic items that have been piling up in the corner. You're welcome to bring microwaves, toasters, laptops, computers, monitors, phones, tablets, radios, TVs, DVD players, printers, copiers, faxers, as well as cables and wires, fluorescent bulbs, and lead-acid batteries. But please do not bring large appliances. Leave the smoke alarms and scrap metal at home. No household batteries. And no ballasts, please, or medical equipment, or anything that has liquids. But otherwise, bring it today until 2 o'clock. Tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., that's over at St. Herman's Harbor Gravel Pit, which is just to the right of the public boat launch. Senior citizens of Kodiak could use some more paper bags. Just feel free to drop them off Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Senior Center. The City Ports and Harbors Advisory Board will be holding a meeting next Tuesday. That's happening at 12 p.m. in Fisherman's Hall. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online on the city website, and the meeting will be web-streamed from that same site. For more information, call the City Harbor Department at 486-8080. And the Kodiak City Council will be having a work session on Tuesday. They will be having a regular meeting on Thursday. Both meetings will happen at 7:30 p.m. in the public library. The meetings are open to the public, and public members are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meetings will also be web-streamed, and that link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the City Clerk's office at 907-486-8636. And early voting starts next Monday, September 19th. The Assembly Chambers, which are located at 710 Mill Bay Road, conveniently close to KMXT, the high school, and the library, will be open for early voting from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on weekdays starting next Monday. Early voting is similar to when you go to vote at your polling precinct on Election Day. At the time you vote, your eligibility is verified, and you're given a ballot to feed into the voting machine. Early voting ballots are counted and are included in the unofficial tally on election night. So they encourage everyone to take advantage of the option to vote early. If you happen to be driving by, pull in and vote early. That starts next Monday, and it's from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on weekdays. If you have any questions about that, call the city clerk at 907-486-8636. The Pillar Creek Salmon Hatchery here in Kodiak is looking for volunteers. They will be doing egg takes through September 27th. They need 3 or 4 volunteers per egg take. It's an all-day volunteer opportunity to take part in a remote sockeye salmon egg take at Saltry Lake. And it's for the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association and the Pillar Creek Hatchery. Float plane flight, lunches, and drinks are provided to volunteers. The workday usually lasts from 7:30 a.m. till late afternoon, depending on the success of operations. Call Al Seal if you're interested at 486-4730.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the September 16th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. It's definitely beginning to feel autumnal out there. I, for one, love it. The colors are beautiful, sunrises and sunsets are spectacular, and even the night sky is showing some autumn colors. That's right. Two of the celestial bodies we can see in the night sky show off the lovely hues of autumn. Mars and Aldebaran, both reddish-orange in color, rise together along the northeastern horizon not far from the moon around 10:40 over the next few nights. Mars currently appears to the left of the star Aldebaran. September and October are a great time of year to enjoy all that Kodiak has to offer. Hiking, fishing, hunting, and even berry picking if you can find a patch that hasn't been picked over already. The days might be shorter, but you can pack a lot into them. So as you gradually switch from shorts to flannel, get out there to enjoy the beauty and bounty of this island we call home. Saturday, summer readers and public library fans should head over to the library at 1 p.m. to celebrate the end of the summer reading program. They'll be handing out awards and will have activities for all. Ellamy Tiller and Steve Richter will be playing some tunes, and rumor has it there will be hot dogs for all. It's all outside in the green space alongside the library by the barn. That's from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday. Thursday is the autumnal equinox, when daylight almost equals darkness and the sun rises due east and sets due west. Celebrate the coming season by getting outside, taking a deep breath of that salt-tinged sea air that we enjoy here, and get on about playing in some beautifully and warmly colored landscapes. See you out there. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.